Herzlich willkommen beim Bücher- und Sonntage-Podcast. Das sind zwei Dinge, die ohne jeden Zweifel zusammengehören. Ich bin Julia Zieschank, Autorin von Jugend- und Liebesromanen. Mehr über mich und meine Bücher sowie spannende Extras findest du auf meiner Website unter juliazieschank.de. Und jetzt wünsche ich dir ganz viel Spaß mit der heutigen Episode. Hello, I'm glad you tuned in. For all English listeners who are here for the first time, I'll quickly introduce myself. I'm Julia, a German author, and when this episode comes out, the second and also last book of my Luckbringer series has just been published. And I thought this would be the perfect opportunity for my first interview in English. I invited the new adult author Hayley Dickert to my show because Hayley lives in Germany, and I thought this is so cool that we can chat about living and writing in Germany. But before I start interviewing Hayley, a few more words about my Luckbringer series. It's a sweet YA romance, a YA folklore with wholesome characters, and one beta reader called it a swoon-worthy adventure, which made me pretty proud. But how did I come up with the idea to translate my German books? Actually, I didn't come up with anything. Translating my books was my boyfriend's idea, because he's from Poland and we only talk in English to each other, and therefore he was not able to read my German books. So he said, why not try translating them into English and make them accessible for a wider audience? And that's what we did, and I'm so happy that he can now read my books too, at least two of them. I have written many more in German though. But enough about me, let's jump right into the interview with Hayley Dickert. Hi Hayley, I'm very happy to have you in today's show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I thought it's the perfect timing for my very first interview in English in this podcast, because my second book translation is to be released in November. And yeah, then I thought, who would be a better fit than you, as you are living and writing in Germany, just like me. So yeah, I would like to start with the question of how you became an author.
Yes. So actually, I've always liked to write. I used to write songs. I had a blog, a lifestyle and travel blog, especially when I came to Germany. And I always loved to read when I was younger, but with college and everything, I kind of got away from the habit. And then early 2022, I started reading again, and it became a habit again that I was reading every single day. And being a person that's always loved to write and do things creatively, I was kind of inspired by these stories that I was reading, and I felt, you know, I want to try that. I think it would be really fun to come up with your own world and your own type of romance and to see where it goes. So I started to write. And of course, the first thing that I worked on was not the first thing that I ended up publishing, but it was definitely getting me into the habit of writing, and then eventually to writing The Sister Between Us, which was my first novel that I published.
Yeah, and it was quite a huge success. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
I find it really so interesting that you moved to Germany because you were born in a small coastal town in Florida. What was the actual reason you moved to Germany?
Okay, so as with romance, it always comes about to be about a boy or a girl. But my husband, we met when I was in high school in the US. His family has a business in the same town that I'm from. And yes, his parents, sister, they all moved over from Germany when he was about 15. And yeah, I met him when I was in high school around 17, and we were together ever since. We're together next week, 11 years.
Wow.
And yes, and so he's German, totally full-blood German. And about 6 years ago, he had to move back because of visa things. You know, this is always the fun part of living abroad. You have visa problems or, you know, so many things that go into that. So he ended up having to come back to Germany, and we were already together for 5 years at the time and even living together. So, you know, the only thing I had there was a job. So I decided why not to try to move to Germany too. And yep, now I have been here 6 years.
Crazy, 6 years already.
Yeah.
And was it hard for you to move so far away from your family?
Yes and no. Like, the actual process was pretty relatively easy. Germany is very open to people moving into the country, or at least you can come for 3 months for vacation. And if you find a job, then you can also switch like to be a resident instead of just a tourist. Which is basically what I did. I came here and then I was looking for a job, and I was lucky to find a job within the 3 months, because if I wouldn't find one within the 3 months I'm allowed to be here, of course it would be harder to try to get an extension. And then I was able to get a temporary visa to work, and eventually was able to get like a permanent residency visa.
Now, I'm especially curious if you did experience any culture shocks when you first came here to Germany.
Yes, I would say it's very different, the culture here, than in America. And I think any German who's been to America would probably say the same thing. One big thing, of course, is I wouldn't really say it's culture, but language, obviously, the language barrier, the language shock. I had already been learning German for many years, being that my husband and his entire family was German. They spoke predominantly German in the household. And I also took a semester of German in college. But even knowing some, when I moved here, it's very, very different speaking it conversationally versus every single day, being around it in an office setting and things like this. So the language barrier was very difficult at first. And it's also really hard on your mind, because you're always trying to, like, every day you're learning new things and with language or things like this. And regarding the culture, it's just a very different culture. And I know a lot of Germans actually don't like this, but let's say in America, especially in stores and things like this, it's a very friendly culture. When you walk in, usually the people working there say, "Hi, how are you? Can I help you with anything?" This is not very common in Germany. Usually they leave you alone, and if you need something, you hope that you can find somebody to help you.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and even, and the cashier, when they check you out, they're not usually saying, "Hope you had a really nice shopping experience," or that you found everything. They just say, "Okay, let me take your items." They check you out, and this is it. And in America, it's a very customer service oriented society, and they're always trying to bring a smile to the face and things like this. And a lot of Germans would say that this is fake. Which I guess technically it is, but for me as an American, I would rather, at least if someone's taking my money, that they're doing it with a smile. So these were some small things that were like just a culture shock, as just how people are. Like in Germany, people are very honest, and sometimes to the point that it's not necessary, but it's just how the culture is. You know, if you would say, "How are you today?" you should only ask if you really want to know. Because people will tell you, "Oh, it was a really horrible day. I got in a car accident. I, you know," something like this. And in America, usually you say, "Oh, how are you?" And they say, "Fine." And then you move on with the day. So these are just small things that you can say from one side is good or bad, depending on what your comfort level is. But they were something different for me.
Yeah, I can totally relate to all what you just said. Also, I have a feeling that Germans are very direct and honest, but yes. At least when we are making a compliment, it really means something.
Yes, and that is very true. So at least when you know you get a compliment from a German, that they mean it. And yeah, in America, sometimes the compliments are only just pretty words. So, you know, there are benefits and disadvantages.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, how does it feel like for you to live in Germany, but to actually write for the US market and to sell your books also mainly to US readers?
For me, it just feels comfortable because English is my native language. And I actually travel frequently back to the United States. And my husband and I, we even have plans to move back within the next year or two. So for me, obviously, it makes the most sense that the United States is my main target demographic, being that I'm a native English speaker. I come from the US. It's much easier for me to market to the US demographic because this is where my books are set. My books are set in Florida. So people from the United States can relate to it more with the language and the dialect and the things that I talk about, because every country has their own, you know, stores and language and the ways that they speak and things like that. So it's like, even in my novels, while I do try to make it a fictional world, there's definitely still things that are similar, like if you would talk about a Starbucks or something like this. So, you know, sometimes you'll use a fake coffee shop, and then sometimes you want to use that standard. Everybody knows, everybody can picture what it is. And being that my books are set in the United States, I think that they connect with English readers a lot more because they are more able to visualize the atmosphere. And also just being that it's 300 million people in America all speaking English, and I'm an English writer. So of course it's going to be one of the larger markets until at least some of the books can get translated, like yours are doing.
Yes. Are you actually thinking about translating your books into another language?
Yes. I have an agent. Her name is Savannah Greenwell from Two Daisy Media. And one of my goals with her is to get my books translated. I've already been in talks with a few different countries. As I'm sure you know from doing it with your books, I'm not exactly sure the process that you did, but translation can be a very expensive process. So to get your book translated into many languages for all over the world would be very, very expensive. And it's also time consuming, and it has to be checked because there are jokes that you might say in English that don't make sense at all in another language. And you can't just use an AI or something like this to translate everything word for word, because it doesn't make sense that way. You have to, you know, have it checked by a human. And because this is so time consuming and financially consuming, I think the last time I checked it was like, I don't know, 7,000 something easily for this type of process. I thought, okay, it's better to work with publishers within each country, because they're making sure the books are translated properly, because also their goal is to sell. They want to also sell the books, and hopefully they also help with the marketing to get into the market for those areas that your book is translated. And for me, of course, I've even told my agent my biggest dream would be German, to get the books translated to German, because of course I live here and I have many friends and family members from my husband who would love to read it, but they don't speak English. So
yeah, that would be really super cool. If that happens, mm-hmm. then you have to come back into my show.
Yes.
And I also would say that the biggest advantage of publishers is the marketing, because I experienced that now myself as a self-publisher, that just the English-speaking market is so much bigger than the German-speaking market, and therefore visibility was way a lot harder. And I just also appreciate it always a lot with my German publishers that they have such a big marketing power.
Yes, definitely. And as self-published authors, like you said, we do everything. We do marketing, we do editing, we do the writing, everything we have to manage ourselves. And the marketing, especially if you're not a native English speaker, like your German is a first language, it can be very difficult, which is actually why when we started speaking, I had recommended to you to start an Instagram just for English so that you could branch out with your English speaking audience, because obviously people who speak English would be afraid almost to follow a channel where they don't speak predominantly English. So I think as a writer whose first language isn't English, and who you also have your books published in another language, you have even double the work for marketing cut out for you, especially if you're doing a lot of your own marketing in both languages.
Yes, it was really a very good advice from you. I think I also already had it in my mind, but it was not really, very happy to have then a double amount of marketing with two Instagram accounts. And it was just that I needed it to hear from a person outside. And so, yeah, you just gave me the little push to and do it. Yeah.
Good. Yes, because marketing can be a very overwhelming part of being a self-published author. And like you said, especially to have then two social media accounts that you have to handle just on Instagram alone can be a lot. Yeah.
True. And speaking of social media and Instagram, how do you actually explain your success on social media? Because I had a feeling you really gained a lot of followers in a very short time.
Yes. So I started my author social media account around August of last year. And I would say until April, I think I gained about five or 10,000 followers, like within that first time period. And then from after like release April, May, I grew to about, I have around 16,000 now. But I would say the majority of it came from the beginning. First I was posting twice a day. Every single day, I never missed a day. I was posting reels, and at this time with the algorithm, reels were kind of new, and Instagram was pushing out reels more than they were pushing anything else out. And very early on, I tried to create these aesthetically pleasing reels that I made sure that they changed with the beat drop and that they were easy for the viewer to digest the information and things like this. And actually, I didn't start with only talking about my own book. I had more of like a Bookstagram account in the beginning where I also shared about other books that I was reading or the writing process and things like this, along with also sharing, of course, teasers to my book that was coming out in April. And I even started marketing it very early. I think probably my first teasers were around October or November. And while I do think that consistency played a big part of this, as I said, for that first 6 months, I really posted twice a day. I spent a lot of time on Instagram. I was very engaged. I was always commenting and messaging with people. And I mean, I still do this, but I've kind of taken a little bit of a step back to only posting once a day, which is still a lot. Many people don't even post once a day, but I just keeping that consistency helps me to just keep going with it, because it's too easy to miss a day and then you've missed 3 days. And as someone who does this as a full-time career, marketing is important to sales. So for me, it's something I just try to make a habit to do every day. And as I said, especially in the beginning, the consistency of it. So for people who are starting new accounts, I highly suggest to find a publishing schedule that works for you. And if you can post at least once every day, it will help you to grow faster. And if you can post twice a day in the beginning, this is great too. I'm not sure if the algorithm still favors this, because as we know with social media, it's constantly, constantly changing. And I don't know, maybe it would even be worth it for me to try going to posting twice a day again, because I think almost everyone I know right now is having really poor social media engagement. And I don't think any of us really know how to fix it or what to do. And it just kind of seems to be entirely across the board, like hundreds of people that I know all complaining about the same thing. So I'm not sure at this point what to do to change it, but I would say consistency is the most important thing. And also, I think it had a little bit to do with luck that I had some reels just go very viral with hundreds of thousands of likes. Some of them went off of the Bookstagram into the areas that you don't really want it to be. And then some of them, of course, stayed in the right Bookstagram area, we like to say, of all readers. And those were the ones that I think really helped.
I find posting twice a day sounds really time consuming. How did you manage with the reels? Did you use a special program or app for creating them?
So in the beginning, I just was using Instagram, but as I kind of found my style, I started to use Canva. I think a lot of people in the creative space, they've probably heard of it, canva.com. It's even a free tool that you can use. They have a paid plan, which I have now that I'm using it so much, but you can even use it totally for free. And I was using this, and I still use it a lot to make my reels. And I put the images and the text directly on there. And then I would export the images to use on Instagram just because it looked a lot cleaner. And I was able to make the text stand out more than the features on Instagram to edit videos are very limited. And I found that I was able to make videos a lot quicker if I was just pre-making all of the content with the text on Canva, and then I only had to upload it and add a sound on Instagram. So it was a lot quicker. And then another thing that I want to mention too regarding the social media success is building a community. First of all, building a community, of course, with readers, because those are the people who are ultimately going to be your customers, who are going to read and share about your books, but also finding other authors. Because my favorite quote that I always say is, where authors are coworkers, not competition. So we have to support each other. And you'll find that if you're in the community of authors, if you're an author on social media, very often daily, you'll see other authors are sharing about the books of their friends, authors, other authors that they know. So we're always kind of trying to encourage one another. And just like you and I are both authors, and you know, we're coming to have a chat. And it's a great place to find a community, a camaraderie, even if you don't grow your reader following at first, at least to find other people that you can talk to about writing or the self-publishing journey.
Yeah, I love that what you just said with authors are co-workers and not competition. And mm-hmm. I also think that the market is just big enough for all authors. I mean, we can only publish one or two books per year, but readers can read so many more books. Mm-hmm. So there's really no reason to not support each other.
Yes, this is so true. And I think this is something hard for new authors to understand right away, because you would think, oh, but we're both publishing a hockey romance, like, and they see it almost as they're a competition against one another. But if you have a reader that loves your hockey romance, then they will probably love the other author's hockey romance too. And like you said, there's enough books out there, there's enough readers out there, and we can only publish so many books a year. So it's better for us to all encourage and share one another's, you know, success than to gatekeep, even if we find stories that are similar to ours. Because one of the things that I've read is there's not really any original ideas. There's been so many books that are written out there. Even if you look at Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, she didn't create the idea of a school for witches and wizards. It was what she did with the idea that was unique and interesting, but the actual idea in itself was not entirely created by her. And I think a lot of authors get discouraged because they come up with an idea for a story. I want to write a story about a witch creating a bar crawl. One of my friends is writing a book about this right now. And you know, maybe then they would find another book that's about a similar topic. But the thing is, it's about how you tell the story. It's not even the plot line of the story. So someone could take the exact same plot that I've had, a second chance romance, soccer romance, friends to lovers, and write a story about it. And it's going to be an entirely different story than the one that I wrote, because every author has a unique perspective. And even as people, we have commonalities with other people, but our stories are still uniquely our own.
Yes, I totally agree. I also have a feeling that you not only have that creativity mindset, but also a very strong business mindset. And I mm-hmm. think it's very difficult for some authors to develop also business mindset, because I think we all just want to write and be creative and not spend a huge part of our time on marketing and thinking about how to sell books. Where does your business mindset come from?
Yes. So I actually have a bachelor's in general business from the University of Central Florida. So this is what I went to college for. And also my parents owned a business all growing up, which is kind of why I went to college for that. And I think that I personally feel like I have been successful so far in my author career. I'm currently doing it full time, which is basically the dream as an author. Yes. And I feel like one of the reasons for this is because although I am a writer, that in the back of my mind, and because of my degree and because of my trainings in the university, I am programmed to always think in a business mindset. So even I'm writing the stories, that's the creative side, but on the other side of it, I'm always thinking about how can I make this profitable? What can we do to ensure that this is successful from a marketing standpoint and things like this? And as you said, I think there's a lot of writers who are, they're very incredibly talented writers. And if the books can get out there, they'll be, of course, major success, but they have no business background. And I personally have friends who have had books come out and they even have gotten audio deals and they don't care to negotiate. They're just happy that they are getting something. And their mindset isn't, oh, I want to make money or make a profit. They're just happy that their book is out in the world, which of course is fine. And of course, I'm also happy when my books are just out there in the world and people can read them. But, you know, I think for someone who wants to make it my career, if I could have a job doing what I love and also make it profitable, that would be ideal. So I don't see anything wrong when people want to make their books profitable and make sure that they're running it as a business, because I think a lot of people, a lot of self-published authors especially, the mistake that they make is they don't realize that when they hit publish on their book, they're starting a small business. Whether you like it or not, you are, because you're putting something out there that people are paying for, and this is a business. And I think a lot of people, they don't run it as such. They don't run it as a business, and then they wonder why the readers aren't there or the sales aren't there. And even if you're only in it as a writer to get readers, you still have to market. You still have to bring people to find your books and to find your worlds that you're creating. So I think if every self-published author would really have this mentality that they're publishing, but they're also starting a business, that they would be really a lot more successful in finding their readers and in making it a full-time position, just by doing small things from the beginning, as you said, like marketing and things like this.
Yeah, it's the same for me. I also want to make a living from my books. Mm-hmm. That's why I also find it so cool that you, for example, have a store where you are selling bookish merch. I saw that you have hoodies and stickers and signed book plates. How did mm-hmm. you come up with the ideas for your bookish merch?
So as I said, I've always had kind of like a creative mindset. Even in college, I had a business where I made shirts and cups and things like this with like unique designs. And so this kind of, I tied it in to my author journey, because I also see all the time, you know, especially really popular authors are coming out with, you know, sweatshirts and bookish merchandise that their readers want. And for example, in Return Policy, there's like a t-shirt from Elijah that Sophia wears with his number on it and things like this. And you have readers saying, oh my gosh, I would love to have my own like that, you know, for when they are reading or something like this. And This Sister Between Us, there's also a hoodie that Leah borrows from Jake. That's his Stallions hoodie from the school, and just small things like this. So before Return Policy came out, since it's a college-based series, I just thought, how cool would it be to have kind of my own merch line based on the college? And that's how it kind of started, with making the logo for the college, which I also put in the book, and things like this. And then I also added bookish sayings and designs, because I just thought, if people are coming to the website, you know, that business mindset, if people are coming to the website for the book, they might also want merchandise that doesn't have to do with the book, but it still has to do with being a reader.
So you designed everything on your own?
Yes. So this is, again, I used Canva, and I used Yeah, I used Canva to come up with some unique designs for stickers and hoodies and things like this. And then also getting feedback, of course, from followers and seeing what people kind of like. And I use a drop shipping website in partner. I have a Shopify store and I've connected, it's called Printful. So if anybody out there is trying to create a merch site, it's a drop shipping site called Printful, and they have distribution factories all over the world. So this was something important to me because especially currently I'm in Germany, sometimes I'm in the US, but that way, no matter where people were in the world, when they order, they get it fulfilled from the place that's closest to them. So it's not too expensive.
Find that really super cool. I'm also dreaming about having something like that at some point. For example, I also would love to have some merchandise for my podcast, like some tote bags where there is Bücher und Sonntage, so books and Sundays written on it, something like that. Yeah, so maybe some plans for next year. What I also found super interesting is that you have different editions of your books, like hardcover and paperbacks. Do you recommend that authors should offer different book editions?
So I think it depends. One, like I say, always from a business standpoint, depends on cost. So how much it's going to cost for you to get the files as a hardcover when you've already got it created for paperback, because most of the time the designer does charge an additional fee to adapt it for a hardcover. If it's not too much, then I prefer to have a hardcover and a paperback, just because there are some people who prefer one over the other. But regarding, like, I might be jumping ahead here, but you had mentioned having different covers for return policy. I have an explicit version and a clean version. So, I mean, explicit, it's not really, it's just there's a cover with a person on it and then the cover that's discreet. So when people read romance books in public, they don't always like to have people, a shirtless man on it. So actually my idea was I wanted to have the non-discreet cover with the man on it because it shows Elijah's tattoos from Return Policy. I thought this was really cool. And I would just say it really depends, because I think that those type of covers, they do best at book signings. A lot of people at book signings, they really like to get the non-discreet covers with people on them. But I think standard, most people these days are buying the discreet covers that don't have any people on them. So I would say I've had more success with the discreet cover. And if you're doing a lot of book signings, maybe it would be worth it to have that alternative cover. But it's not also necessary to do. I would say if you will only have one, to definitely go with the discreet cover, because a lot of people don't want to have a book with a person on it, just because they want to be discreet when they're reading in public. So again, this comes to the cost. If you think the cost will be worth it to get an extra cover made, or if you would rather to wait and then maybe release it further down the road as like a special edition. So I released mine both at the same time. And I think it maybe would have been better to like wait and release it later as a special edition, because many people only wanted to buy one and they wanted to buy the discreet version.
Or maybe to have that exclusive cover on a Kickstarter campaign or something like that.
Yes. Yes. Or maybe, like you said, I have my Shopify store, so maybe only offering the exclusive cover on my Shopify store and not on Amazon or something. So, but again, it really just depends on your audience too, because I know a lot of authors who mostly do the covers with people on them, and that's what their readers like. So my readers tend to like the discreet covers, whereas others might tend to gear more towards those with people on them.
Yeah, especially when you say with Shopify, I think direct sales are also so important. And at least it now seems like you have with your non-discreet cover the most sales anyway when it's direct, like on readings or something like that. So maybe that's really a good idea to not put it on Amazon, but have it a bit more special for really like the fans, to offer it on readings or in your shop on your website. Do you have any other marketing advice for our listeners?
As I said before, the biggest thing that I would say is just consistency of posting and to try to find a professional style and a professional brand. So maybe look at other authors who you like and see how they're displaying themselves and what type of branding that they have, like the colors that they're using. And of course, you don't want to copy anybody, but to try to just get some ideas to how what could work for you. So for me right now, I do like a post that has a standard style and background, and then a reel, and then a post again with that same standard style and background, so that when people go to my page, it kind of has this aesthetic look to it. Because at the end of the day, when you post something, you're hoping to gain followers, which will also hope to gain readers and book sales. So you want to make your social media profiles as appealing and professional as possible. And then I would just say, maybe like if you would want to say some mistakes I see that people make regarding the marketing aspect, would be not getting a professional cover done. So of course there are those very unique unicorns who are able to design a very beautiful cover by themselves, but I would say standard, most of us are not able to come up with something that's actually of caliber. Because as you said, there's so many books out there, and your book cover is the face of your marketing. So you need a book cover that people look at it and it makes them stop and it makes them read the rest of whatever else you're posting or sharing about. And that's really, really important, is to have a professional eye-catching cover. And you can also ask around, ask your friends, ask your audience for feedback, like the types of covers they want, like rom-coms, like the more cartoony covers, thrillers and romance, they all have a different kind of style. So just making sure that you're going with the style of the genre that you're writing and that it's a very professional, eye-catching cover. And the other mistake I would just say in regards to social media in general is I see people using their author Instagram accounts kind of as a combination of posting personal stuff with author stuff, you know, like photos of their kids or what they ate for dinner and things like this. And while, you know, stories can be a great place for that, on your feed of your page to attract new readers, I don't think this is the best method, because if you're wanting people to come to your page to follow you regarding writing or reading things like this, they probably don't care that you had a tuna casserole for dinner, you know? And I see stuff like this all the time. And of course, it also breaks up the look of the feed. And, you know, if that's your thing, if your thing is reading and cooking with Julia, then that's something different. But I just see a lot of people who use it as posting personal stuff. And of course, that's sometimes okay, but you want to make sure you're still really focusing on that author reader aspect for that account.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with what you just said. I think I only post the personal stuff in my story where it's then also gone after 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
What was a big problem for me as a new author in the English speaking market was actually how to find some ARC readers. How did you do it? How did you find your ARC readers, and how many ARCs did you actually send out for your very first release?
Mm-hmm. So I think I'll talk more about what I did for the first release, as you said, because of course now that I have, you know, for by my second book that came out, I had about 10 to 15,000 followers, and being able to just ask my social media followers who wanted to sign up for an ARC, this made it relatively easy. But in the beginning, actually, I had my ARC readers sign up back in November of 2022, and my book didn't even come out until April of 2023. But I was just, you know, very ahead of the game. It's actually not necessary. For my second book, I think I asked 2 weeks before. But I just wanted to make sure that I had time to nail down really a good ARC team. So with my first book, a lot of what I did was personal outreach. So finding these mid to large Bookstagram accounts. And at the time for me, that meant like having 10,000 followers, because I only had around 500. And it's just so intimidating when you're reaching out to these Bookstagram accounts that have 30, 40, 50,000 followers and you're basically a nobody. It feels that way. So I reached out to a lot of, I guess you could say, micro influencers, having, like I said, 5 to 10,000 followers, which for me, only having 500, that seemed like a really great number that hopefully that they would be willing to read it, even though I'm a new small author. And I would just DM them personally and say, "Hi, I've written, I see that you like reading romance, and I've written a book, and it has these tropes." And I had a post that had the tropes along with the blurb, and then I would just forward share with them that post and say, "Any information, you can read it here. And if you have questions, let me know. Like, I'd love for you to sign up to my ARC team." Obviously, I'm paraphrasing, but basically, the gist is sending them a personal DM, asking them to sign up for your ARC team. And I found a lot of success this way. A lot of people were really excited about the idea and the tropes. And so they signed up personally, and I did a Google form. This is how I do my ARC signups. I have a Google form where I ask them like their name, email, social handles, make sure that they're okay with the trigger warnings and things like this. And had people sign up directly through there. And another way, as I said, is social media. So creating a post that says, looking for ARC readers. And I would always include like the cover and the tropes of the book, tropes being like friends to lovers, childhood rivals, et cetera, things like this. And with the blurb as well, if you have it. And this is a thing that other authors can also share to show that you're looking for ARC readers. So something that I always try to do is when I have other authors in my network that are sharing that they're needing ARC readers, I always try to share it to my stories so that even if one or two of my followers see it, that might be possible for them to be an ARC reader for another author. So social media is a huge area, of course, where you can share or reach out personally to other bookstagrammers. And one tip I would say is with my first book, I think I did about 150 digital ARCs, which sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. But of course, the more ARCs that you have, the more likely that these are going to turn into reviews, because I would say only like 25 to 30% of people who sign up for an ARC actually read it and follow through with putting a review, unfortunately. Depending on the book, I think like my second book, I might have had like at least 50% who actually did it. But the point of the matter is there's a large majority of people who sign up, but they aren't able to complete it for whatever reason, which of course, it's understandable because they're doing it entirely for free, which, although you did send them the book that you wrote, but sometimes life happens, things come up, and that's why I think it's always better to create a larger ARC team. So if you're hoping for 50 reviews, try to get 100 signups, things like this. And the other thing I wanted to point out is with my first book, I sent a lot of physical copies to the bigger micro influencers, having 10,000 followers, 15,000 followers. So I sent them physical copies of the book, because for me, it was a hope that they would share about it and, get the word out there. But I would say a lot of the physical books that I sent didn't, those were the people who didn't end up posting about it or reading about it. And especially the larger accounts that I sent the physical copies to, they usually get so many physical copies that the book gets kind of like put in their to be read pile, and you hope that eventually that they get to it. So I would say to really focus on those ebook ARCs because it doesn't cost you anything. And if the person doesn't read it, it's no harm, no foul. You didn't spend any money. Besides your cost, maybe for like the website where you sent the ARCs, like I use a website called BookFunnel. Whereas, like for example, if I send a physical copy, now I'm out 10 bucks because they've never posted about it. And if you have 15 people who didn't post about it, as self-published author, every penny counts. So I would say focus on e-ARCs, especially as new authors. And if you're going to send physical copies, just try to be very selective about who you send it to, because there will be a lot of bookstagram influencers who they only accept physical ARCs Which is understandable because they get so many offers, but even then they still don't always read them. So it's a little bit of a risk. But I've had a lot more success with the e-arcs, and you know, that way when someone, they can't read it, it's fine for me because I didn't have any fixed cost already in sending it.
That's true. Yeah, I also only send out ebook arcs, but I have a feeling that especially on TikTok, it's nicer if you have a physical book which you can show in your video. So I was actually also wondering how you did it with sending the physical books, because if you would ship them from Germany, it would be very expensive. So how did you do that?
The best thing is actually for an arc, usually arcs are sent before the book is published, but for the physical book, like if I was sending someone a physical arc means advanced reader copy, for those listeners out there who don't know. but if I was sending a physical copy, I just waited until the paperback was officially published, which is usually about a week before release. And then I send what's called an author copy. Which is, it's just a cheaper way for me to order a copy instead of ordering it directly through Amazon's website. I order it from like the author backend, and you can order them in not every country in the world, but I think there's like 8 or 10 marketplaces where you can order Amazon author copies, including Germany, USA, Italy, Spain, Australia, Japan, it, you know, countries like this. And so I ordered author copies and mailed them directly to the readers in the different countries. And then there were just some people I couldn't send them a physical arc. Like I had an account from South Africa, and she's a very big influencer. She has, I don't know, 30,000-40,000 followers and has really great engagement, but it would have cost me, even shipping from Amazon, it would have cost me around $60 to send her a physical copy, which, you know, for me, looking at return versus cost, it wasn't worth it for me. So sometimes, unfortunately, you do have to come to an influencer and say, I'm sorry, but I can't get you a physical copy. Like, for example, India is a very expensive country to mail to. I think it costs me around $25 every time I have to mail them. And I'm even mailing it directly from Ingram Sparks or directly from Amazon. It's just, they don't have any distributors that print directly in India that we have access to. So occasionally I'll send arcs to India, but usually those are also e-arcs. And then the easiest ones are, of course, like, you know, in the USA. If I'm not currently in the USA, I'll send an author copy, and including shipping, it costs me about $10. So the important thing is, I have a lot of friends who send physical copies that are even signed. And like, I have one, she lived in the US and she was even sending physical copies, signed copies to Europe, to like UK and Germany. And I think she was paying around $30 or $40 per parcel, because, you know, shipping is unfortunately very expensive these days. And there actually came a point that I said, you know, this is great that you're doing it, but you have to think about your cost versus your reward. Is it really worth it for you to be spending $40 to send this? And A, you could also just send them a regular author copy that would only be $10, or would they be okay with an ebook? Because a lot of the times, if you're just open with a arc reader or a bookstagrammer and you say, I'm sorry, but because of budget constraints, I can't send everyone a physical copy, they're oftentimes totally fine with an ebook. So it's just worth for people to keep in mind, like you said, that it can get very expensive very fast, because of course we're just hoping for people to read it and give us a review on it. But, you know, if it comes at the cost of $15 a book, you know, we have to sell, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 books from that review for it to make up. And then from the business side, it's something you really have to consider.
Yes, it's true. That's why I also didn't send any physical arcs English speaking readers yet, because in Germany I always did it also like you said. I ordered the author copies from Amazon, but I ordered them directly to my place, because I always like to send ship them signed. So within Germany, a book shipment is very cheap, And then I always find it nice if the people even get a signed copy.
Yes. And I mean, to be honest, once I relocate back to the United States, I think I will start doing more of the signed ARCs again, and even PR boxes. I see, like, for example, there's an author, Kat Singleton, and she does incredible PR boxes. So she sends the influencer her book along with different merchandise that is related to her book. And of course, when the readers get it, they're very excited and they post about it, and they're more likely to probably read the book and share their thoughts on it because they're so excited about the PR package. But of course, as you said, currently being in Germany, it's not realistic. And I have a few influencers in Germany that read in English that I could send them to. But, you know, then it's time consuming to put these things together. So I think maybe if you're an author in the US market, it could be worth it to, you know, buy some things in bulk and do it this way. But if you have a huge international following, like for me, I mean, I'm not saying it's huge, but my following is very international. Mm-hmm. I have a large following from Australia, you know, USA, Europe, and it's just not possible to send, you know, everyone physical copies. And even I did signed copies. I sold signed copies recently, and a girl from Australia bought a signed copy, and I think she paid $36, so like 30 euros or something, just for the shipping. And it's just so crazy, you know. And for us as authors, for art copies, for physical copies, it's unfortunately, it's just the cost of shipping makes it hard to do something really special, like you said, where we can include, you know, stickers or bookmarks or something personalized, because I also like to include personalized handwritten notes and things like that. But it's just, unfortunately, where we're located, it's not really possible unless you're only sending it within Europe, and in Europe is not most of the English speaking audience. Of course, there's a lot of people that read in English and they speak English, but they still prefer, of course, books in their mother tongue because it's easier.
Yeah, that's unfortunately true. Yeah. What are you currently working on right now? And are you also planning some new merch for your shop for the Christmas season?
So I am currently working on a Christmas novella, and it will be the second installment in my Crystal Bay University series. And that series started with Return Policy. I do have some ideas for Christmas merch, although I haven't created anything yet. Of course, we're still only in September. but I do hope to have some things up in the shop. But my main focus right now is to focus on this Christmas novella. And also, as I've shared with you and on social media, I'm 5 months pregnant right now. And my amount of time in the day that I have energy and I feel motivation is not very high right now. So I try to work around 1 to 2 hours a day, which I know it's not a lot at all. I do also have a two and a half year old. But I try to work at least 1 to 2 hours a day right now. And so for that time, I'm focusing really on writing and editing the novella that I hope to have out by Christmas time this year. And originally, I actually was working on an entirely different book that was supposed to be the second book in the Crystal Bay University series. But because of the pregnancy and just the things that I was inspired on, you know, they say some people are mood readers, and I feel that I'm a bit of a mood writer. I just wanted to try something different. And that's why I started working on the Christmas novella and kind of put the other project to the side. So the novella I'm working on, it's an age gap romance, 10 years. The female main character is 21. The male main character is 31. He is the football coach at the college, and she is one of the cheerleaders. And they were both mentioned in Return Policy, but very briefly background characters, which was nice because it's been a little easier to play on their backstories and things like that because they weren't a big focus in the previous book. So for people who are writing series, you know, it's really important to kind of leave like Easter eggs, like little things in the books before foreshadowing and leading up to their stories. And luckily there was some small things in the first book that will work for the second book, but I still had a lot of room to play around with their backstory. For example, one of the tropes is also going to be siblings X. So one of them is an ex of, you know, the other's sibling, which is always a really interesting dynamic to add to that forbidden romance trope. And my first two books had a bit more serious topics, as you can tell from the trigger warnings, including grief and death and things like this. And I mean, they definitely still had a lot of fun banter things going on in them, but underlying they had very serious topics. And currently, especially with, you know, pregnancy and hormones and things like that, I just wanted to write something that was more light and fun, and I didn't really want to go into any like dark, sad, you know, type of places, because I think some of the best stories have these really just tragic background stories and these crazy plot twists happening. And I just wanted to write something, you know, light and fun. And that's kind of how this novella came to be. And I'm hoping that I will be able to continue with it and publish it in December to at least publish something else before my son comes as well.
Sounds really very, very good, especially with that it's the Christmassy topic. And then I find it's very fitting if it's also some light novella. So I think that fits very well. And yeah, speaking of Christmas, do you actually like the Christmas markets in Germany?
Yes, I think this is, although it's extremely cold, one of the best parts about being in Germany during the holiday time are the Christmas markets, the Weihnachtsmarkt. Yeah. They are so enjoyable. They, you know, I grew up in Florida, which is a very hot climate. So we don't have snow for Christmas. We don't have any of the traditional things that you see in a Christmas movie, which actually ties into my novella because it's also going to be set in Florida. And I just wanted to show people that you can still have a merry holiday without all of the snow and the ice skating and things like this. Because I think for people who are from a warmer climate, we see Christmas very differently. And as I said, being from Florida, I've never had, you know, before I lived in Germany, I hadn't had a cold Christmas, a snowy Christmas, anything like this. And the Christmas markets are just that epitome of Christmas magic. And, you know, you have the hot chocolate and the cute little stalls where you can buy gifts. And some of them have like carousels and rides for the children. And if you get lucky, you can go on a day when it's snowing. And it's just very, very Hallmark Christmas type atmosphere. And they're all over Germany, as you know. And it brings you really into the Christmas spirit. So this is definitely one of the things that I do enjoy being here during the holidays. While it's not easy to always be away from family, there are these small, you know, joyful things, especially around the holidays, that are a nice change.
Yeah, I'm also already looking forward to the Christmas market. And yeah, I also love the cozy atmosphere with all the lights, and you have a cup of mulled wine. And yeah. I don't know, is this actually a very German thing? Was that mulled wine?
Yes, I think they do have it in the United States. Occasionally it's like basically red wine that's warmed up with like ginger, not ginger, cinnamon and orange and some other seasonings in it. And I know that you can get it at some places in the US, but I would say like a US holiday beverage would be more like eggnog or something like this, which actually you can't really find in Germany. I made it myself one year for Christmas, and it was really hard to find the ingredients to make this. Okay. Whereas in the US, you can actually like buy it already pre-made in a bottle. So this is like Eierlikör, like egg liquor, but it's a bit different. And I think that the mulled wine is definitely a very German tradition. And you can buy the tea bags that you just put in a glass of warm wine. And I used to bring those to the US for Christmas just to you know, make it a little more festive. So this is definitely a German tradition, but a fun one, an interesting one, you know, different from the eggnog or spiked hot chocolate or something like this.
Yes, that's true. And do you also have a favorite place or city or landscape which you like to visit in Germany?
I have visited Neuschwanstein in southern Germany, I think 5 times. And this is a very popular castle. I think Snow White or Sleeping Beauty's castle was even based off Neuschwanstein's castle in the city is called Füssen. So
yes.
In southern Germany. And this was always one of my favorite places to visit just because it's very beautiful. It's very large mountains. It's close to Austria. And but it is a very touristy area, of course. So now my husband and I, we also really enjoy to go to the Black Forest, which is also, again, just like a very nature filled, like a mountain range. And it depends where you go, because some of the areas are more just like farms and nature, and then other have like bigger mountains and nice sightseeing points and stuff like this. And these are always my favorite places to travel in Germany because they just are so beautiful, and you can see the really beautiful nature, and you're always passing also castles. And in Germany, I think there's over 20,000 castles. So whenever you travel, you will always pass by some, and it's just always nice to be in the beautiful nature part of Germany.
Yeah, I could totally relate to that. I also love to go on some hikes with my boyfriend because we are also located in southern Germany where there are a lot of mountains and nice mountain lakes, and it's really very beautiful, especially in summer.
Yes.
So as the final question, you also have to answer the question I'm asking all of my guests, and that is, what does a perfect Sunday look like for you?
To be honest, a perfect Sunday for me would be with like nice weather, that you can either sit outside or inside and just do nothing. And I think this is also part of the German mentality, because in Germany on Sundays everything is closed. In America, it was different. You can still go to the grocery store. You can still do your shopping, anything. And so, you know, when I lived in America, I liked to use Sundays to get ready for the week and go grocery shopping and all of those things. But now that I'm living in Germany, actually, Sunday is really, truly the day of rest. And you can't go anywhere. You know, grocery stores, everything is closed, malls, shopping, eat and yeah, so now I'm really into the habit that on Sundays you Sonntag ist Ruhetag. you don't do anything. You maybe go outside or you do some grilling when the weather is nice. But really just trying to just relax and spend some time with family is my favorite way now to spend a Sunday.
Yeah, I have to say I'm also big fan of that rest day concept of Sundays, that you really are forced to get out of your daily routine and just do something really different from all the other 6 days of the week.
Yes.
So where can people find you and your books online?
Yes. So on social media, you can find me at Haley Dickert Author. Most of my social media are all with that handle or just at Haley Dickert. And all of my books are on Amazon. They're free on Kindle Unlimited, and they are also available on most online retailers. I think even Thalia and those German retailers might have them, because when you publish through Ingram Sparks, they are also brought into the other online systems, like in the all over the world in the book. The online book retailers, but yes, mostly on Amazon and, like I said, Kindle Unlimited. If you have a subscription, it's totally free to read them. The first book is The Sister Between Us, and this is a second chance romance, and the second is Return Policy, which is a college football romance.
I will put all of the links to your books and your social media in the show notes of today's episode. And I thank you so much for being here today and for sharing all of your experience of living and writing in Germany. It was really such an inspiring chat with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Haley Dickert. And if you are in the mood for a wintry book with holiday vibes, be sure to check out my latest novel, Bad Luck in Love. You can find the link in the show notes for this episode. And I would be very happy if you would give my sweet YA romance novels a try. You can also check out my Instagram for further information about my book translations. You find me under at Julia Zieschank Author. Thanks for listening. I will now switch back to German. Das heute war wirklich eine ganz besondere Folge für mich. Und nicht nur deshalb, weil es mein allererstes Interview auf Englisch gewesen ist. Du kannst mir glauben, ich war so nervös wie bei meiner allerersten Bücher- und Sonntage-Episode im Januar 2020. Besonders ist die Folge auch für mich, weil ich hiermit ganz offiziell verkünden kann, dass ich meinen allerersten Online-Kurs gelauncht habe. Also, falls du nach der heutigen Folge daran interessiert bist, deine Bücher auf Englisch zu übersetzen, ich meine, ein paar gute Marketing-Tipps hast du ja jetzt von Haley bekommen, dann kannst du das Thema Buchübersetzung jetzt mit meinem neuen Kompaktkurs Buchübersetzen mit AI angehen. In dem Kurs lernst du in kurzer Zeit, wie du dein Buch professionell mit künstlicher Intelligenz übersetzt und anschließend im Self-Publishing veröffentlichst, damit auch du im Handumdrehen den englischsprachigen Markt eroberst. In meinem neuen Audiokurs erwartet dich eine Schritt-für-Schritt-Anleitung, mit der du hinterher in der Lage bist, dein Buch selbst zu übersetzen und zu veröffentlichen. Der Kurs dauert insgesamt circa 1,5 Stunden und ist unterteilt in 5 Module. Und diese 5 Module sind Manuskriptübersetzen mit DeepL, von der Rohversion zum fertigen Manuskript, Formatierung und Veröffentlichung, Reichweite aufbauen und ARC-Reader finden, Marketing-Tipps für mehr Sichtbarkeit. Jedes Modul ist circa 15 Minuten lang und das Praktische ist, durch die kurzen Module und das kompakte Wissen kannst du ganz nebenbei in einer Woche, wenn du zum Beispiel jeden Tag ein Modul anhörst, lernen, wie eine professionelle Übersetzung mit künstlicher Intelligenz funktioniert. Vielleicht fragst du dich, warum du dein Buch überhaupt übersetzen solltest. Ganz einfach. Den größten Teil der Arbeit, das Buch schreiben, lektorieren und veröffentlichen, hast du ohnehin bereits getan. Warum dann nicht deine Leserschaft erweitern und deine tolle Geschichte noch mehr Menschen zugänglich machen? Deine Vorteile des Kompaktkurses noch einmal zusammengefasst. Du erhältst kompaktes Wissen, kurze Audiolektionen, das ermöglicht dir wiederum flexibles Lernen. Außerdem gibt es ein Workbook zum Kurs sowie ein Begleit-PDF zu den einzelnen Modulen. Und wenn du magst, dann hör dir am besten jetzt gleich kostenlos das Einführungsaudio an. Den Link dazu findest du in den Shownotes zur heutigen Episode. Dort findest du außerdem einen Link zu einem Blogartikel, wo du alle Infos zum Kurs auch noch einmal ganz in Ruhe nachlesen kannst. Und wenn dir die heutige Folge gefallen hat, dann leite sie gerne einem lieben Menschen weiter und hinterlass mir eine Bewertung auf Spotify und Apple Podcasts. Und damit bleibt mir nur noch zu sagen, ich hoffe, du schaltest wieder ein, wenn es Zeit ist für Bücher und Sonntage. Bis zum nächsten Mal!